Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. Saturday night, a little basement blast time. I was going to do a lengthier episode, but I think I'm going to break it up into some basement blast to go along with a Jessica Simpson series that starts tomorrow. Yes, a little Jessica Simpson tomorrow. So for the first of these basement blasts, just kind of by itself on Saturday night, earlier this week, I did a blind item, which hopefully you saw, because hopefully you read the site. Kind of, you know, I've had a Courtney Love, obviously, deep dive, several of them, including one talking about Kurt Cobain's death, which lasted a few parts. And, you know, there was some information that's kind of been being pushed forward, pressed forward, over the last couple of weeks, which I think is kind of important. And it's not that I'm ever going to change the description of Courtney Love from possible murder suspect, because in my mind, she's still a possible murder suspect. However, especially considering the events of her former son-in-law, she certainly has it in her to, if not be the person, to be the person who hires the person, or to find somebody willing to do it. They were probably going to, I don't want to say kill her son-in-law, but they were going to do a lot of damage to her son-in-law that could have resulted in death. I think that was the kind of the idea. Let's beat him up, let's torture him, whatever. And she had to have known that. And I think that a lot of that's going to come out over that trial. And I think also during the trial, when they depose Courtney Love, they're going to ask some questions about Kurt Cobain. Because, hey, did you have anything to do with it? Because then it's a little pattern, okay? You did this with your son-in-law, you did this with your ex. So, you know, it's something that possibly you have a history of. But there is a good counterpoint, counter-argument to be made. Now, one can say that Kurt Cobain was worth way more dead than alive to Courtney Love, in one sense. In the sense that if they were really going to get divorced, then, you know, obviously her earnings would be significantly cut compared to whether or not if he was dead. But at the same time, Kurt and his friends were essentially the, I don't know, everything behind Courtney Love and Hole's music. Once Kurt kind of died, then she tried to lean on others like Michael Stipe and some others to get some songs, never matching the success that she had when Kurt was doing it. So in that sense, he was still worth more alive, but if they were going to get a divorce, then was he really going to help her anyway? But the point that everybody has been cut, not everybody, the point that has kind of started to make the rounds and that I find interesting is there anybody else who had an interest in Kurt being dead? Would they make more money from Kurt being dead than alive? And one of the things that you have to look at is into look at the link between Kurt's death and his label, which was run by Geffen, and management. Now, I'm pretty sure that Courtney Love had something to do with his death, but we don't know what. What kind of accessory, just in the same situation as her son-in-law? What did she tell them to go do? Just to get the guitar, to beat it out of him, to get some kind of measure of revenge? But she didn't actually go do any of those events. She was not there that night that she sent Sam and everybody else. But there's a lot of people, all these people, Geffen, management, Courtney, who would all agree that he was worth more dead than alive at that point, because right before he died, Kurt wanted to drastically change the sound of Nirvana. And Tom Grant always talks about having some quote-unquote extraordinary evidence on tapes that he'll release, but he's yet to release these new tapes. And he's been talking about them for years. It seems like Tom Grant has speculated that Courtney had to do something with the death of Kurt, but can't 100% prove that it was necessarily her that did kill him. So he's been kind of toying everybody and having fun with the story and profiting off of Kurt's death for quite a while now. And, you know, so you have Courtney probably involved. And her erratic behavior and then Kurt's decision to divorce her soon kind of proves that. But people just like to automatically point fingers at Courtney as the actual killer rather than a conspirator, accessory, because she's the easiest one to choose as the scapegoat in the situation. But no one has really discussed the fact that, you know, David Geffen's pretty greedy. You know, the Nirvana catalog has been making a lot of money since Kurt died. And Kurt is even more famous now than he was alive in terms of, you know, legacy overall. So, you know, people are speculating, well, wouldn't put it past David Geffen and his management to have suicided him. After all, he was a well-known depressed junkie, right? The months before his death, he was behaving erratically. He escaped rehab. He bought a shotgun and so on. And he was just about to change their Nirvana sound drastically. And there's no way for them to have known whether that would have taken a hit on Nirvana's reputation or sales or what have you. You know, the Unplugged 1994 album made a ton of money, but he was already dead when it was released. And Nirvana was making a lot of money for Geffen, as much as Guns N' Roses or even more at the time. So it would have been not easy. But all the cards are there to make it look like a suicide. You have a guy you know is on drugs, bought a shotgun, acting crazy. We can make it look like he had suicide. Who's really going to check? And Tom Grant did prove multiple times that the facts around Kurt's death don't match up at all. And that would have been impossible for him to kill himself after the lethal dose of heroin found in his system. I think that the vast majority of people who take an interest in this are convinced that Kurt did not commit suicide. It's just a matter of what did exactly happen. You know, that impossibility to kill himself after that lethal dose of heroin, you know, that did Kurt shoot up right before that gunshot? Now, Buzz Osborne for the Melvins, who knew Kurt way before he got famous. You know, Kurt cited the Melvins as one of his biggest inspirations and even constantly wrote about how amazing they were and how much they inspired him when he was a teen in his journals. And I think that the Melvins were the first punk group he had ever heard of or seen live. And Buzz criticized Montage of Heck, a documentary about Kurt, saying that it's 90% crap, that people want to believe Kurt was suicidal. And, you know, and he reviewed the documentary and he's given interviews about it. And another thing to notice about Montage of Heck, as well as all the biography books and documentaries of Kurt, they tend to exaggerate his depression, his bipolar disorder, in an incredibly obvious and alarming way. And, you know, I have talked to somebody who, specifically about Kurt, who was also bipolar. And they said that it seems exaggerated and that the books really kind of take it to an nth degree because they are trying to prove the point that they said about, you know, at the beginning. And if you only are looking for the cherry picking the facts, you're going to find that. You know, sure, he did quote unquote kill himself, at least on paper. So he'll always be seen as this depressed nihilist, but these books and documentaries really did their best to exaggerate that part of him, and it really feels weird and kind of forced. The way that they try to shove the destined to kill himself nihilist rock star narrative down people's throats, and it's been going on for more than 25 years now. Again, they use some facts. They cherry pick the facts. You can prove any point you want if you just want to pick certain facts. You got to use both sides. And I've talked about it before in documentaries. You know, whether it's some, you know, overtly political thing where obviously you're trying to prove a point, or even Making a Murder, where you take the things that are going to make your side of the story come true and ignore the other stuff. So they use some facts, but then go on to make heavy assumptions about what or how he was feeling during some parts of his career. But they're not based on evidence, but speculation, right? In order to make this kind of tortured genius story more believable. And if Courtney did, quote unquote, kill him, it would make sense that she would try to maintain this narrative and confirm these mostly fictional stories, but it really feels like she's just kind of a pawn in this whole scenario. Now, whether or not you think she's a pawn in that scenario, because remember, she was whacked out of her mind. Is she a pawn in the scenario dealing with her son-in-law? Now, Courtney says that she's 18 months sober. And I think what happened with the son-in-law convinced her, hey, I need to say, go on record, pass lie detector, give me some tests. I'm 100% sober and I've been sober for 18 months. And it has direct correlation to the events of that night. The constant kind of redaction of the mythology of Kurt Cobain does nothing but bring more attention and speculation to his case, which makes people maintain interest in him, right? And the Nirvana catalog. People talk about Kurt Cobain and his music, but in the same breath, they're just as likely to talk about how did he die? Was Courtney involved? You know, it keeps it alive. It generates sales. His estate is worth a ton. It's hard to tell exactly because it's all divided up, right? You have the other members of Nirvana. Courtney sold a bunch of hers. You know, Frances Bean has some. So you really can't tell. You know, how much is all of Nirvana worth? You know, hundreds of millions. And there's a reason why, you know. It's because of this constant talking about it. Plus his manager, Danny Goldberg, whose ex-wife used to be Kurt's attorney, and said she didn't feel like Kurt killed himself. But as soon as she said that, she disappeared from the media pretty quickly and then divorced Danny Goldberg. Interesting, right? And I just, you know, there's also the book a couple of months ago, which consisted, this is from Danny, right? He did this book where it said, about how inevitable Kurt's suicide was, how depressed he was, and so on and so on and so on. And it sounds just, it sounds remarkably like Chris Cornell. Oh, he's so, you know, he's suicidal. Yep, suicidal. Definitely. Oh, yeah. You know, that's what you hear. And Goldberg even dedicated a couple pages trashing the conspiracy theories around the suicide, and he did it out of nowhere. You know, that's just, why would you do that? You know, because they like this whole suicide, the rock star, inevitable, that kind of thing. So did Kurt's management and record label have anything to do with some of the stories of Danny Goldberg or the angle that he took? Plus, in an interview Danny made about the book, when he was talking about Kurt's suicide and Kurt overall, Danny's body language really seemed off, you know? And I'm not the only one to see that. There's tons of people who pointed out in the comments of the video. And I think that kind of his book kind of set these things in motion. Because prior to that, I don't think that people have really been talking about the possibility that it could be management or Geffen or kind of using Courtney as a pawn. And maybe, you know, and it's quite the shame that Courtney gets all of the quote unquote credit for his death. Now, I've never been that person. I said always possible murder suspect. And I've always thought that she kind of needed a little help. I mean, don't get me wrong. Courtney is a crazy narcissist. But think about how much heroin she was using, how many drugs she was using. And then you have to say, okay, so she's going to have to conspire to kill him and hide it so perfectly, you know, especially given the fact that she was out of her mind on drugs at the time, right? She's just kind of the easy scapegoat. But no one ever blinks an eye when you mention, okay, well, what about David Geffen? What about management? you know? And one of the things that Tom Grant kind of provided was, he talked about how they screwed up the cover-up. In the death certificate, they described a specific gunshot wound that would make it seem like he'd blown his head off by putting the gun in his mouth. But they found a different type of wound in his skull, not the one described in the death certificate. And they couldn't even get the death certificate and suicide note right. You know? And, you know, I think that a lot of people, I don't know. It's some fans can't accept the fact that their idol's dead. And I think that it's kind of nice to have a new generation of people who didn't really even listen to Nirvana, but then they go and they look at just the facts and the documents, right? I think everybody totally believes, obviously, that Kurt Cobain was shot. And remember, let's talk about the heroin overdose, right? 10 times the lethal amount. I think it might have even been more than that when I did the other thing, but about 10 times the lethal amount into his 120-pound body. No blood spatter, no oral bleeding at all, which points to Kurt not having a blood pressure at the moment the shotgun discharged. And when you look at the death photos and, you know, I don't know if you really want to. I'm going to post the suicide note to go with this basement blast. But there's a photo that shows there's no exit wound from the intraoral discharge with the shotgun against the victim's chest, as the gun would have needed to be positioned to cause the injuries that Kurt received. This is called a penetrating shot, which is distinguished by the projectile having, like, entered the body but not exited. And that's what happened to Kurt, although purely by chance. It's rare in shotgun-in-the-mouth suicides, but due to the light gauge of it, angle, and skull thickness, there was no exit wound, which, although a horrid thought, would have yielded a lot of evidence regarding body position and gunshot angle and the blood evidence, but the lack of a bloody exit wound allowed us to see that only a small puddle of blood was found. And then there's another picture, and it's a skull of a suicide victim with the exact injury as Kurt. But this victim has a perforating shot in which the projectile leaves the body through an exit wound, and these drastically different outcomes can be caused by a slightly different angle of shooting, resulting in the shot missing or hitting and slowing greatly at the hard palate. Now, the difference of shooting angle may be for any number of reasons, like how the victim was positioned and shot angle, or Kurt could have been shot in an unnatural angle for suicides, causing this anomaly. You know, and don't forget that the person who did the exam, one of the biggest celebrities in the world at the time, was the assistant medical examiner of King County. Couldn't get the real one out. You know, maybe they made a mistake. Maybe he was actually covering for Courtney and wrote perforating instead of penetrating to add to the bloodbath image of suicide that Courtney was peddling at the time. Remember? And we see that in another case, like with Chris Cornell, where we see this whole suicide. Now, either way, this could be a big deal. Kurt Cobain has a scientifically incorrect reason listed as his cause of death. It needs to be changed. Even if so that everyone who reads it doesn't get a mental image of their folk hero with his head blown off. And while they're fixing that glaring 20-year error, maybe we could get some competent investigators to look at the rest of this train wreck. You know, it's just, there's so many things and so many things that people are talking about. You know, there's angry letters from Kurt to David Geffen. And how do we know they exist? Because one of them went up for auction. And normally, David Geffen is one, if you send him a nasty letter, he is going to send one just as nasty back. Well, Kurt was sending him nasty letters, and David Geffen was sending him very polite ones, measured ones, in response, because Kurt was so important to him. You know, now, I'm really waiting for Tom Grant and his extraordinary evidence that really proves that Courtney Love killed him. But he's been saying it for years now. You know? And I just kind of would like to see that. You know, an actual old friend of Kurt's has a YouTube channel, and he's talked about it too. And he says he doesn't believe it was a suicide, but called Tom Grant out on his BS. You know, and then Tom Grant didn't even want to kind of reply to him. It's obvious that the higher-ups do benefit from the Courtney killed Kurt narrative. So, of course, that she won't sue Tom or the people that make these claims. She can say it was suicide, but she can't really strongly oppose that narrative or try to shine light on the situation because she and or Francis, something could happen to them. Now, at the end of the day, do a lot of people truly believe that Courtney is a sociopath? You know, what about her actions towards her son-in-law? Is she going to blame them on drugs, which is why she's 18 months sober? I was under the influence of drugs when that happened. I would not make that same mistake again. I was under the influence of drugs when my husband was suicided. I will not make that mistake again. She, you know, makes money from Kurt's death. Kurt is an unfortunate cash cow, and Courtney Love was the easy scapegoat. I mean, if she really loved him, that would explain, you know, the on and off drug use, right? And when she got this award this week where she said that she had been sober for 18 months, it just kind of all clicked. How she was going to use drugs as an excuse for what happened to the son-in-law. But then you're going to have to say, okay, well, how whacked out was she? And remember, Sam is going to, and Courtney, are not 100% on the same page. Kind of, but not really. Better than they were. Not as good as they were a year and a half ago. Even if Courtney has all the money in the world and the ability to seek the best help in the world in terms of her mental health and drug issues, if she knows that Kurt was murdered in cold blood, and that she needs to keep lying about how suicidal he was, of course, that'll drive her crazy. Is that the reason that she's been doing drugs all the years? I mean, a lot of years have gone by and she really sabotaged her life and her career. Sure, the Tom Grant stuff did ruin her career to a large extent, but she still had the chance to revive it with her 1999 record and a bunch of chances in 2000s for album releases, but she couldn't stay off the drugs. Remember, she even tried to kill herself when Frances was like 15 or 16, but she was revived, and she admitted it was, you know, an attempted... I don't know. If you were in her situation, would you have gone insane too? And the speculation that, you know, been drugged for 25 years after his death, orchestrated his murder, and that she kept covering it up while she was on crack, heroin, and all kinds of drugs. You know, could she have been able to do that? Or is she the scapegoat? I mean, she has been on drugs a long time. Is it because he died? Is it because she played a part in the death? Is it because she's overcome by suicide? You know, his suicide, it's a lot. You know, what part did she play in it? Some people think that she didn't play any part in it. Some people think that she, you know, pulled the trigger. I lie somewhere in the she's helping out, kind of in the middle of the road theory. I think even the people who think that she didn't play a part in it maybe know what truly happened. But then, you know, did, you know, she conspire to kill him, giving her, you know, behavior these past couple years. And I don't think that people are putting the connection. So when you hear the buzz and you read what people are, ever since Goldberg's book came out, they're not really, well, here's, they're talking about Courtney saying that she's 18 months sober this week. They are not counting back 18 months to see what was happening 18 months ago. And all of this situation with the son-in-law. I think that they forget about that. And when you want to totally say she had nothing to do with Kurt because she's just not that kind of person, then how do you explain the son-in-law actions? Which to me are just as horrific. You know, the son-in-law wasn't on any kind of drugs and they're just dragging him out of there. I mean, it was a home invasion that she authorized. And not just authorized, helped plan. Now, to what extent, we do not know. So when people say, oh, you know, she couldn't have done it, you know, and they're totally forgetting about this other situation. I think they're just focusing on Kurt's death and they haven't thought about what Courtney's doing now. They think, oh, well, she's been, you know, on drugs or whatever for the past 25 years. Oh, and look, she's 18 months sober. Great. Go back and look. So I don't think you can put her totally in the clear. There is a group of people who would put her totally in the clear and totally blame Geffen or management or whatever. I don't think that's totally true. You know? Does she seem troubled? Yeah. Sad? Yeah. Scared? Yep. But she's got a little cold-bloodedness in her too, doesn't she? Now, what about the suicide? The handwritten letter. Is it thought that that letter was forged? It's pretty much more than obviously forged. And I've talked about it before. It reads more like a goodbye to his fans. As in he's leaving the industry. And given the fact he wanted to change his sound, and his label probably didn't want to, he probably wanted to run away from the music business altogether, especially since he had a baby to take care of now, which would have been a no-no for the money-hungry people who wanted to milk him as much as possible. You know? The last couple of paragraphs, and like I said, I'm going to post it, that seemed like he's saying he's killing himself, look terribly different in terms of handwriting and letter size compared to the first part of the letter. I mean, he kept journals all around his house, and it was known that he let friends and everyone who visited to look at them. It looks like he had written this in one of his notebooks, and someone from the people who wanted to kill him, label management, Courtney, whoever, managed to take it and make it look like a suicide letter. Another interesting thing is it seems like there were two different suicide notes at the death scene. There's some pictures that were released from 2014, which the Seattle Police Department released because of the conspiracy theories. And you can see where the suicide note was. He used a pen to stick it to a pod, and you can see that there's an obvious hole from the pen on the photos. But how come there's no pen hole at all whatsoever on the scanned photos of the suicide note that were released back in the day? It seems like they scanned and printed his letter twice and mistakenly forgot which one was found at the death scene, the one with the hole, and uploaded the wrong one. You know, you can't make it up. The people didn't even try covering up his suicide properly. It's all kind of crazy. But that's, you know, I'm glad that there's talk about this. I'm glad that there's some movement. I wish that people also, before you totally exonerate Courtney or say she had no part, and we need to completely focus on other people at the scene. And I talked about them in the deep dives about it and some other people. You know, but this is just focusing on management and Geffen and what part Courtney could have played. So I do not think, given the things with her son-in-law, that you can just say, oh, Courtney had nothing to do with it. She was far too gone. I don't think so. She wasn't far too gone when the son-in-law was going on. She managed to make that decision just fine, even though she admits she was on drugs. So something to think about on this Saturday night. I will talk to you guys tomorrow.